Well, thank you, Alan and TJ. Happy Friday, everybody. I'm glad you could join us. Always a busy week. In the first one, well, we're going to have Rob Slee and also Robin Roberts is in the studio with me. Happy Friday, Robin.
Good morning.
Always great to have you here. We're going to be talking about more business. And Robin and I had a pretty good conversation a couple of weeks ago about messaging and things like that. We're going to continue that with Rob. He says he has a few things to say.
I can't wait to hear.
This should get interesting. So he's going to join us at the second segment. First, let's talk a couple of cyber and business bites. And Robin was checking her phone just a minute ago. I said, oh, is that an iPhone 10? So everybody that's on Sprint that have the iPhone 10, the XS and XR models, Sprint issued a update on Tuesday, and immediately they started losing people. Their phones were dropping off the cellular network. Well, your smartphone's not very good when you at least can't make a phone call on it. So I would the suggestion is hold off a few days, probably early next week, and then do the update because there's probably going to be a new one come out. It's not a universal thing, but a lot of people are complaining that they can't make phone calls anymore. So Robin's going, she says, I got my update, but I haven't put it in yet. I was like, woo! The intrusions on the cyber bite side have not changed. It's almost you can't talk about it anymore. There were three this week of massive breaches. It boils down to if you have cloud services and you're hosting your data out somewhere on that, make sure that you talk with your staff, your engineers, and you're paying for those upgrade services in the cloud, that those servers are configured properly. And that's what's been happening is you just get a server, somebody hasn't set it up right, and all your databases are live on the internet. Well, you can imagine banking, or this one was mortgage records, Alaskan Public Assistance, and Kansas, the, what do they call it, Valley Hope, was a medical firm, had 70,000 records out there. So it's just nonstop. So make sure those servers are set up. And then a big announcement. And this is under the business bite, I guess, category. You've heard Mike Weir on this program a number of times talking about the El Paso County Medical Society and their national arm called ProPractice. This is a domestic U.S. in helping the medical community and practices with business topics. Obviously, docs are trained to do medicine well. That's good to have. But on the business side, there's a lot of times they need some input, some guidance. Well, that's where ProPractice and El Paso County Medical Society comes into. Well, last night, they celebrated with a banquet their 140th anniversary. It was quite a soiree. And a shout out to Mike. Great job with you and the staff. But they also made a major announcement there that they are now a formal partner of Business Week in Review. We're going to be having more segments that are aimed at medical business on the podcast site as well. So you're going to be hearing more about that. And it fits very well as we're trying to help the medical business. So great to have them on board as a formal partner. You're going to be hearing more about it. So it's going to be great fun, and I'm looking forward to it. We're also going to be talking with Byron McCurdy more of Benefit Solutions. And we've talked about finance and marketing with Robin and Rob, security on that group. But the one leg of the stool that we have not had much on is HR. As I always joke, and Robin is already grinning, I call it, you know, adult daycare. But that has been needed. And so you're going to be hearing more from Byron as well, talking about the HR side of things and helping those managers as one of the they're not A-team yet. We're going to bring them on as A-team. But made the comment as the CEO of this company, sometimes feels isolated. It's just when you're at the top, you don't know where you're headed or who you need to talk to. And they've been very pleased with who we bring on the program, sharing of stories. And Byron is the best storyteller of all, along with Robin. She's got some – she was wound up this morning about an HR issue. So we're going to be talking more about that. So stay with us. We're already off to a gangbuster start in January. So we'll be talking more about that, and I'll try not to scare you with too much of the cyber side. So we're going to go to a quick break. Stay with us. Rob Slee is going to join us, and we'll get Rob and Robin wound up and talking about business issues for 19. But it's just 9:14 on Friday morning. You're listening to the Business Week in Review on KRDO News Radio. We will be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. Great to have you on a Friday. Formally introduced, Robin Roberts, the CEO of Pikes Peak National Bank, is back with us. Robin's always great to have you on the show.
Good morning. Great to be here.
And Rob Slee has joined us. Rob has been with us a number of times. It's always a great discussion and business and marketing, and we spin each other up, and I just stand back and watch then. Rob, welcome to the program.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Robin. Great to be back.
So I hope you had a great New Year. I think you said you were out having a little vacation. That's good. Come back.
I was floating around the Caribbean, to be exact. I'm a cruise guy.
Well,
so, yeah, it was fun.
That's always interesting. Well, the fact that you came back is positive news. I thought, you know, after all of the commotion and politics and everything else, you'd just stay there.
Well, I was lucky to get back. I mean, given what's going on in the airports today. So, I mean, it's just, you know, the world, especially the U.S., couldn't be a stranger place than right now. It's almost a fictional existence. You know, you remember in December when the markets dropped just on the threat of normalization. You know, interest rate normalization. I look at this and think, could this be more ridiculous than what's going on?
It's just amazing to me. And I've, you know, we do a lot of business in Europe as well, and we talk with and some of my cousins there as well. And they say, we just laugh. They said, the U.S. is, it's just, as you say, almost surreal. It's like, what is going on? So from a business perspective, you know, Robin and I talked, it's been a couple of weeks ago on the program, what do we do as business people? How do we move forward? You know, Robin and I talked about advertising a lot. You got to keep your message out there. She had a great line about, you know, if you're not advertising and you got your message out there, you could very easily be assumed that you're a casualty and nobody's going to call you, and it just gets worse. But, you know, give us some pearls of wisdom. Save us, Rob.
Yeah, you're not going to like this. You're not going to like this. Frankly, what I'm telling people, and I've said it in all my books, so if anybody's read any of my books, they'll hear this again. It's time to get out. Every 10 years in the U.S., going back as many 100, 150 years, we have a repeating transfer cycle in this country, at least going back to the last 100 years. That the very end of the decade, if you're a business owner and you're at all of the mind of someday getting out of your business before you die, it's the end of the decade that you need to do that, because then what happens is the U.S. falls into a macroeconomic recession, which is, you know, you can see the clouds forming now. And since it takes about a year to get out of a business, because it takes a long time to sell a business, if you don't get started like now, then you'll miss that window, and then we go into a recession. Then it takes about 5 or 6 years before the window opens again. I've been investment banking to the middle market for 30 years. Jeez, how old am I? For 30 years, and I've seen this firsthand, this cycle repeat itself 3 times now, and we're just about to go through it again. So you probably have 6 or 9 months, at most 12 months, to get out of a business. So what I'm really doing is talking to mainly the baby boomers. Because, well, I don't think they want to hold their business 6 or 8 more years, I don't think.
That's probably so true. And Robin is over here. She's smiling and
nodding my head.
She's cheering you on. So.
Well, we have economic amnesia. You know, Robbie, I'm sure you see this. We can't remember.
Very short memories. And then, Rob, when you do say things like you just said, which is just telling the facts and trying to be helpful, people say, well, you're just being negative. I tend to be an optimist, and things are great, which is a short-term memory.
That's so true.
Imagine what this economy would look like if we had 5%, 4 or 5% interest rates.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, the Dow would be in half. The business activity would be not quite in half, but, I mean, it'd seem like it'd be in half. And that's, at some point, you know, that's where we're going to go here. At some point, this all breaks out. And so all I'm doing is recommending to people do what I've done myself. The only businesses I'm in now I've held, are the ones where I have a legalized monopoly. And I have several of those, believe it or not. Several of those, and I'm going to keep those because it doesn't matter what's going on in the macro economy. I'll be just fine with those. But the discretionary ones I'm out of now.
How does banking fit into all of this? You know, I'm assuming a lot of the businesses that deal with Pikes Peak and Robin, if they've got loans out there, how do they manage those? Or, you know, I think somebody mentioned a little while ago that they're debt-free, and it's like, yeah, that's a very good thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an enviable position to be in, particularly if you're a middle-market business. But if you're not, I mean, commercial loans, they reprice, you know, every 5 years or so. And so if interest rates are going up, that's going to have a negative effect on your ability to manage costs and cash flow.
That's huge.
So increasing interest rates have, and it also affects your ability to be able to purchase, you know, make capital expenditures, to expand, because it costs you more.
Yeah, cost of capital just keeps, that lead into a business big time. And I know Rob talks about that a lot as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and here's the big issue on that is it's all about cost of capital. A couple of years ago, I did a big study where I compared what private businesses of various sizes, all the way up to like $300 million in sales, but all the way down to $1 million in sales, what their cost of capital was and whether or not they were covering their cost of capital, meaning generating returns greater than that capital. What I found in the U.S. is 80-some percent of our private businesses are not covering their cost of capital, which means that eventually they're slowly but surely going out of business. That's what that means. And that was sort of a shocker to me. I knew it was a fair, you know, amount, a fair percentage. I didn't know it'd be 80. 80 is a little worrisome in my mind, given that that's half the U.S. GDP is our private businesses.
Well,
so
well,
80% of half the GDP is slowly but surely going out of business. And it's all traced back to what we've talked to, three of us have talked about in the past, is that most owners are lifestylers, right? They're just in it to have a job. They're not in it to create a valuable business. It's never been a goal, never will be. And that's the problem. If you're not creating value, somebody else in that 15 or 20% who are covering their cost of capital, they are creating a lot of value, and they're taking slowly but surely your market from you. It's what's going on. That's exactly what's going on Main Street right now, that some people are just making more money than, you know, that's sin. But for the most part, people are just, yeah, at best, keeping their head above water and having a job as a business owner.
You know, that's a very good takeaway for our listeners today, is go back. If they don't know what their net is, they better in running a business. But if your net's below your cost of capital, if you've got those loans out there, you better know those, because that's a big, big thing. And Robin's grinning.
Well, if you have a loan, a commercial loan with the bank can tell you. The bank will definitely tell you if you're covering your cost of capital, because they know.
Yeah, and they're going to ask question.
Well, what was interesting to me is I heard just this morning, I was watching one of these talking head shows on TV, as opposed to us being talking heads on radio. And what they were saying is on the Russell 2000, which are 2000 smallish public companies that they sort of grouped together in the Russell 2000, a third to a half of those companies aren't covering their interest costs now. And this is at historically low interest rates. They're not covering their interest costs now. I mean, what does this mean in terms of if we ever did somewhat normalize rates, which eventually every economy has to? You say, wait a minute, how can it be? I mean, those are what would be called zombie companies, right? If you're just sort of going along and going through the motions of being a business, but you're not creating any value, any economic value, you're a zombie business. And that's it's not just private companies. It's half the Russell 2000 as well, which is all of this should be just absolutely be, you know, alarming us. But for some reason, I we're all caught up, it seems, in things that don't really matter, and we can't get to the stuff that really does. And I have a hard time getting my mind around that.
It's amazing to me, and as you two talk about that, that actually would compound the failures. So the economy turns down, your sales turn down, now you can't cover your cost of capital, it gets worse. That's a snowball effect.
Yeah, that's what will happen. I can't tell you exactly when it will happen, but if this transfer cycle repeats, which it always does, like I said, it has for 100 years, I would say sometime later this year, this calendar year, what will happen is some really bad stuff's going to happen, and then that snowballs too. It will start with corporate debt being sort of out of control. They borrowed all that money to do shareholder buybacks. Really, that's what we're about. And but they did all that. Now they're in trillions of dollars of debt. It'll start there, high yield debt, and then it'll roll into other parts of the markets. And finally, it'll get to us in Main Street, probably a year and a half from now, that everything will be sort of looking a little black. So.
You're just full of rosy content.
The way I told you, you were going to like what I had to say, but I'm consistent because this cycle always brings this out in me. This cycle.
There's one thing about this program is we put our cards on the table and we talk about it because that's what's helping business. They may not want to hear it, but if you're going to run the business, you got to stay on it. Well, we're going to take a short break, Rob and Robin. When we come back, Robin has a very interesting question that we're going to dig into. But great. Stay with us. It is 27 after the hour on Friday morning. You're listening to the Business Week in Review. We'll be right back. Well, thank you again, Alan and TJ. Welcome back, everybody. As we've been scaring everybody. Usually it's cyber stuff, I scare everybody about. But now it's business because it's interesting. Robin Roberts is in the studio with me, and Rob Slee. We've been having a discussion about where the economy is going, and now that we've gotten everybody's attention, and during the break, the phones were lighting up. So we're going to be talking about, okay, now here are the issues. Now what can we do about it? But one of the questions that came in first, they were asking, let's elaborate a little bit from our financial gurus here. Talk about shareholder buyback and how that can really also add to the pains of a business if you're starting to buy back stocks and things like that. Rob, do you want to start that off?
Yeah,
how does it impact things?
And what I was really talking about is the trillions of dollars that have been used in the large public companies for shareholder buybacks, and they replace that. Sure, you have fewer shares outstanding, but what happens is all of a sudden you have a lot of debt on the balance sheet. Some of them were using cash, but for the most part, the corporate debt that's out there in America anyways is from those buybacks. So what that means is they didn't use that money for more research and development. They didn't use that money for, more investment in systems in the business. They used it to buy back shares. I mean, in what world would we do that for trillions of dollars? Well, I guess the answer is the world where management's incentivized for bonuses and compensation to do that. So the public boards of America have set the game up such that, that's how these managers, top managers, are compensated. So it doesn't make sense from a sustainability standpoint in my mind that they would do that. And the debt's about to come due is kind of what I'm saying. You don't see as much of this on the private side. So I was really talking about the public side.
Okay. Well, and that's a very good point. And it makes a lot of sense. Robin, do you see that in the private side as well?
No, I don't see it in the private side, but a lot of what I read in business is that, as particularly that change in the tax laws incentivized these public companies to, instead of investing in the growth of their business or new revenue streams, to buy back shares. That's what they did with the tax benefits. And that's not necessarily a benefit to the overall economy.
Well, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and Robin has another follow-up question about now that we've scared everybody to death. talk about that, Robin.
Well, so, Rob talked about, and I kind of jumped on board with it, about there could be a change in economic circumstances coming. So, Rob, what are some steps, some guidance that you have for business owners, some steps that they can take right now to put themselves in a better situation?
Yeah, my answer to that hasn't changed in the last 3 or 4 years. It's basically get out of high cost debt. If you have some bank debt or that's the low cost debt. Get out of the high cost debt. Get to the point where, as a business owner, especially, you're focusing, and this is my mantra, you're focusing on high value added activities. So most of your day, 80-90% of an owner's day, should be focused on that, building the next niche, making sure the company culture is improving, make sure you got the right people in the right place. Those are high value added activities. Now, unfortunately, where do most owners spend their time? On the low value added, answering the phone, getting on the forklift, But if there's still, we've got, it's always a good use of time as a business owner and people managing a company to spend most of their time on high value added activities, because that's, I mean, just by definition, that'll create value in the company. That's true in a recession. That's true in an almost recession. So that's what they should be doing, is getting out of the high cost debt and spending time on high value added activities.
Very good points. Any other pearls of wisdom out there other than getting out of debt? Well, and this kind of goes back, we'll carry this over into the last segment too, is we go back to the marketing discussion, getting your message out there. And I know that's a hot one for Rob as well. It's like you say, working on the business, in the business as well. You got the financial side, but you have to keep your messaging out there as well.
Yeah, I'm real big on, because there's so much noise in the market, because there's so much competition. It doesn't matter what you're doing. There's so much I'm real big on setting up market makers. Like in my investment banking business 25 years ago, I signed referral deals with some of the largest financial institutions nationwide in this company that I'd be their investment banker for their clients. And so I never have to like go out and make sales calls and all that. I have all these financial planners and bankers doing all that for me, and CPAs. In almost every business I've been able to figure out how to create that market-making condition where I'll share some of the fear, I'll do something to incentivize somebody to share their clients with me, so I don't have to go out and spend that same amount of money, you know, hoping to get clients. In this case, I get clients, you know, with a market maker. So I don't know if we've ever talked about market makers or not, but it's my marketing mantra.
Well, you've already given us the great point for the wrap-up segment. We'll talk about that, because you and I have talked about that a little bit offline, but we'll follow up on that and share that with some of the businesses. You bring up a great point. You don't go out on a one-off sale, or you don't buy a list of potential leads or things like
right.
that. You get that referral coming along the way. That's a great point.
And I share, and it's just the... You know, you can't expect people to do something and for nothing, even though that's what the federal employees are doing right now. You really can't expect people to do work.
Robin about fell out of her chair right there.
But, you know, so I think in normal situations, it's really good to share. So, you know, it forms a team approach, too. And I, like I say, it's not just service businesses. I've been able to create market makers there. You know, I've owned parts of over 50 businesses now in all different industries. And I've been able to crack that market making code in each one of them. And it just is much more of a rifle approach than, you know, the shotgun approach. That's where I'm going with it.
Always good points. Well, maybe we'll break a little bit early, because I want to come back. We want to talk about market makers now. We're going to turn Rob loose. Stay with us. You're listening to the Business Week in Review on KRDO News Radio. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back. Robin Roberts of Pikes Peak National Bank is with me, and Rob Slee. We're having a discussion about what happens in the downturns and all of the various financial bits and pieces. We were talking about, we're getting into market makers there. And Robin had a very good question about when you're sharing, does it depend on the business itself? Robin?
So, Rob, you were talking about creating market makers as an investment banker. And I was thinking that perhaps, you know, business owners that might be listening right now that aren't in investment banking, but more, you know, in a construction business, or maybe they're a printer,
right.
How they might be thinking, well, how do I figure out who my market makers would be? Like, what is that process?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I wrote a whole book on this called Midas Marketing.
And I was just going to say, we got to mention
that book.
What
book is it covered?
I'm not trying to sell books, but I mean, I just coincidentally, what happens is there's natural linkages between any business and other businesses. It can be in their community. It generally is in their community. That, for instance, like a banker, I'll use a banker. You might have a relationship or develop a relationship with cash management systems people, people that go and put cash management systems in company. And so you get, as the banker, you get with that cash management systems company and say, okay, we'll tailor a product specifically to ride on top of your cash management system product that makes it so easy for the business, and let's figure out what the quid pro quo is for you then, cash management system person, to recommend the owner bring us in. It's that thought process of who is already dealing with the customers you want to have. Somebody's already dealing with them in some capacity. They're doing something with them. And what I always do is I just invite myself to lunch with various people I think could be market makers, and then, you know, try to develop a relationship first, and then say, look, there may be a way we both can do well here. And then I'll just lay it out. And that's how I do it in every business. And it just turns out that, you know, you're not going to have 100% or 1,000% hit rate, but when do you ever? I mean, it's one of these things that if you have, oh, 6 or 8 market makers for your business, what you'll end up finding is in a year or two, half to two-thirds of your new business will be coming through that channel, which is, you know, that's a lot of business.
So true.
And it gives you, and then it gives you, the business owner, time to do more of those value, high-value things that you were talking about earlier.
Yes, and setting up market makers is maybe the highest value thing, you know, once you get past corporate culture building and that kind of stuff, because it becomes a sticky relationship. The more people you have on the team, the stickier the relationship becomes with that customer, and I just like sticky relationships. You're not having to re-earn that business every week, you know, it's just life's too hard for that. So you got to create the stickiness with the customer, and having a, you know, multi group team on that, all trying to help that customer in different ways. I just find that to be very useful for everyone, including the customer.
That's a very good takeaway for everybody. Go out and invest. Like you say, buy them lunch, talk to them, build those relationships, because you never know where it's going to come from. We've been that way for a long time. Yeah. Robin, you were.
And get Rob's book, Midas Marketing.
Yeah, it's, well, you put that out, I don't know how many years ago, Rob.
That's an oldie but goodie. Yeah, I haven't even read that book, my own book, in probably 6 or 8 years. But I think it's time tested. I think market making concept is time tested, and you just bite off as much as you can chew as an owner when you're setting this up. If you're a local or regional firm, obviously. See, I've been providing national investment banking for, like I say, more than a couple of decades. And so it made sense for me to go after some of these big financial planning and insurance companies to be there, you know, to be my market maker. But that isn't always going to be where, obviously, everyone wants to be. They don't, you know. So just chew off as much as you can swallow.
Well, and we're a good example of it in my own companies. Just to your point, Rob, and I've, you know, been a follower, and we've talked many, many times over these subjects of, you go out and you build those relationships. They may not be a client, but there's some potential synergy there. They may become a client, they may know somebody else, and it starts to grow organically, but you're building those relationships. And I say every opportunity is a marketing opportunity, because you never know who you're going to be talking to, what their needs are. Out of that discussion, it may be a whole new product launch, as you just mentioned, a whole new product line or a new service line. It could be a whole new business.
That's where niches come from, by the way. They come from that sort of, I call it corner side vision, corner of my eye, where I had what seemed to be a harmless discussion with somebody. And next thing you know, they say, well, we haven't been able to buy that product or service in the market. We just can't source it. Bing, bing, bing. You know, what does that tell me? That's, you know, as a nicheaholic, it tells me that there's a possible niche there. And when I hear the same thing, we haven't been able to source that product or service 3 times in a, you know, 2 or 3 month period, I really investigate it thoroughly to say, oh, should I be providing that product or service? That's where niches come from.
And it goes back again to what we've talked about so many times on this program, is you'll find entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs are good. I'm not bashing them. But they'll come up with a new idea. This is the greatest thing on earth, and we're going to go out and sell it. Well, it goes right to our point about pushing on the rope. Go out and find the need. Just as you say, somebody can't source something. They need something. When you identify that need, now you're pulling on the rope, and it is a vastly different response.
Well, that's another reason I like market making activities so much. That's purely a pull. The market maker pulls you into an existing customer of theirs. It's like, oh, it doesn't get any better than this. All I got to do is perform as I said I would. Well, I'm going to do that anyways. You know, it's just a lot easier. It's a lot quicker way to the market, I found, than, you know, going out there and knocking on doors, so to speak, individual doors.
Yeah, the one-off sale, just, you never get anywhere.
Yeah, it's just too hard. Yeah, you just can't make it. You'll be out of business before you make it.
Well, that's... good takeaways all the way around this morning as we talk about this issue. And Rob is right. Every decade we go through this cycle. It's pretty standard. But as Robin says, we have short memories. I think that gets worse as I get older, too.
Yeah, same here. Same here. I have to write it all down because I can't remember.
Then I forget where I put the piece of paper. Any final items, Rob? Robin, as we wrap this up?
A real positive side. Where I've created the most value in my life, and this is going to once again sound negative, but it isn't, is taking advantage of other people's short-sightedness. So this will be a time in the next few years where I'll buy some cast-off divisions, I'll buy some failed companies, I'll go into bankruptcy court and buy some stuff. I didn't cause those things to fail. It's not my problem they failed. It's not my fault they didn't read any of my books to create value. But this is the time to really create the next few years once it all goes down. It's really the time if you're a longer-term player, like you have a 10 to 15-year view. It's the time to get busy. And we'll talk about that in a future show, how to do that, because I've spent my whole life doing just that. So in these down 5-year periods that are down of each decade, I'm not just sitting it out. I'm not just cruising. I'll go and that's when I buy companies for nothing.
Outstanding points.
5 years. Yeah. Yeah, the 5 years of light when things are good of the decade, then I'll build value in them. But, you know, to get into it, I buy these things for nothing.
Excellent point. Robin, any other pearls of wisdom?
No, I'm just agreeing with Rob. I'm just thinking back to the recession and watching what some of our customers did who were prepared, had cash, and were looking for the opportunities. While everyone else was suffering, they were taking advantage of some opportunities that they were prepared to do.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Over the last few years, they've built incredible wealth over that. Because they were ready to do it.
Yep. It's buy low, sell high. That is still, even though they don't teach that in MBA programs, and I know this for sure, buy low, sell high. Never goes out of fashion.
Well, thank you both for being on the program today. It was a great discussion, as always. I love when the two of you are here, but we have to wrap it up and say, everybody have a great weekend. You've been listening to the Business Week in Review on KRDO News Radio. We'll talk with you next week.